This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, and welcome to The Morning Run. I'm Sharad Kutan, and with me, Kusu Chuang and Ibrahim Sani, we have a lineup for you this morning that should titillate your mind, provide some food for the brain.
At last, Sharad, you used another word other than exciting.
Titillating.
Titillating. I love this auto-critique in the morning, the Chuang, that you love to get into.
I woke up to the news that Chuang alerted me minutes ago that Chelsea won 4-0.
They didn't just win, they thumped my team.
But it was home, it was at Stamford Bridge.
I had such a bad night last night. Because when I went to sleep, they were already 2-0 down.
Is that a team that you've been with all your life?
When I started watching,
football. I stuck with the team.
And you know, the thing with Chelsea, at least, is that we define ourselves as...
A Chelsea player?
Yeah.
Come on, don't tell me you're Chelsea
fan, pre-Abramovich and post-Abramovich kind of supporters, right? It's worth noting that I was a pre-Abramovich supporter, just like Jason Lowe, the singer CEO of Tube Talk. He is also a pre-Abramovich supporter.
What, the Ruud Gullit era?
I'm assuming Abramovich was big and therefore brought a lot of people
He is the Russian billionaire that just spent billions into this football club.
He was the Danny Warbucks Chelsea.
Wow. You know, in the day, because of peer pressure, I too supported an English football team.
I can't see you.
Okay, could you guess? Can you guess which team I supported?
You're Liverpool, what else?
No, why then Liverpool? Who? Tottenham Hotspur, man.
Tottenham Hotspur.
Glenn Hoddle was a player. Adiles, do you remember those guys?
Garth Cook.
That's the time I did it just because I wanted to be part of the pack. I wanted to be accepted.
Spurs is still a good team.
Glenn Hoddle went on to be a bit wacky, didn't he?
Wacko, man.
All of them actually went on to be a bit wacky, actually.
Many headers.
Too many headers, concussive.
Giving too many.
Okay, so back to that lineup that will give your brain fodder for the rest of the week. We have on the Breakfast Grill this morning Jagdev Singh. He's the tax lead at PricewaterhouseCoopers, Malaysia. And also Ng Yen Sin. She's vice president of the Center for Better Tomorrow, or SENBAT. And they are going to be engaged with you, Chuang. Engage is the word I'm using this morning.
Not head to head.
Yeah, okay. Thank you for that auto critique. So what is going to be the main sort of issues you're going to be taking up with them this morning?
Well, we've had the benefit of 2.5 days of rumination, essentially. And I'll be looking essentially at fiscal issues about affordability, about achievability of income and revenue and cost targets, about the affordability and, the government's fiscal position, things like that. Of course, Yin Sin is she's more of a policy person, so she'll want to talk about the lifestyle issues. And there'll be a lot of stuff to talk about. Annual budgets typically are very, very multi-layered. There's many things to consider. So my task will be try and hone in on the issues.
And it's actually, you can actually pick and choose which issue you want to go deep into.
Correct. There's so many things to discuss.
So, for instance, this year, my wife actually, took a look at the budget, actually read the whole damn report, the whole speech that was presented by our Prime Minister. And she actually had a keen interest on the health sector, for instance, right? Particularly on the allocation of new doctors. Everybody thought that there would be a lot of doctors that couldn't find a job. Sorry, a lot of medical graduates couldn't find a job to become doctors. And this is the first time that the government has actually, quoted a real number. And the number is 2,600 people. Imagine this. You have studied 5 years of medical school and 2 years of pre-med school before that. And on top of that, so the whole, standard one until form five kind of school. And you can't get a placement to get a job. You're still dubbed as the medical student graduate rather than, a doctor. Yeah. And the reason is because there's not enough hospitals.
Yeah.
So, this budget actually addresses that. to some satisfactory liking, to many, it's still not enough. So I guess there's still a lot of things to discuss, and you know, medical students is just one of them.
Right. Okay. Also, we're going to continue that discussion on the budget after the 8:30 news. We're going to be speaking to Nancy Shukri. Of course, she's the minister in the Prime Minister's Department, and she's with the Sarawak Party PBB, and she's going to give us something of a perspective from Sarawak. And giving us a Sabahan perspective is Daryl Lee King. He's the Penampang MP who recently crossed over from PKR and has become Vice President of Parti Warisan Sabah.
Now, of course, so the reason we are inviting both Datuk Nancy Shukri as well as Daryl Lee King is to give a lot of spotlight on the Sarawak-Sabahan story or angle into the budget. I think it's important for us to note that this kind of analysis is not normally done when a budget has been announced.
So, and do you think that was enough for the East Malaysians this year?
No, tough, I think apparently they weren't particularly happy. So, I mean, I think the idea is to kind of look at what that means. And also, when you look at the kinds of demands that being made by Sabah and Sarawak as, you know, the founders of Malaysia, the two other territories together with Singapore and, of course, the Malaya that made up Malaysia, what their demands are, how it's going to affect the federal budget. So if, for instance, you know, Sarawak gets greater oil royalties, Sabah gets greater oil royalties, how does it affect what Putrajaya can spend nationally and especially on the peninsula? So I think there's huge implications for the kind of demands that Sabah and Sarawak are making, as justified as they may be, right, depending on your point of view.
Just to add a little spice to that particular statement, Parti Warisan Sabah is, the new party that was created by Shafi Abdal. Shafi Abdal was the former vice president of UMNO.
Just recently formed.
Yeah. Very recently formed.
So I've lost touch with all these, you know, political. I'm not really much of a political person. So there's this new party.
Have you got your head buried in the sand? Well, the proverbial sand.
His team just lost 4-0, right? You've got to give him some sort of
You know what it is, right? It's just fatigue and lethargy with all these political developments and bickering. So, you know, is it true to say that the political situation in this country is a little bit messy right now? Would it be right to say?
Well, I think it has been so for some time. I think the lines
of haven't got their act together, and even at the BN level, it's all a bit.
Well,
you know.
I think on both sides of the divide, if there's a single divide, there seems to be their problems. I mean, both coalitions have their internal tensions, and so yeah. But the question is really addressing the question of fatigue, Chuang. I think. Whether people feel optimistic and therefore, and I think that's clear that I think most Malaysians don't feel. I think there have been surveys suggest that Malaysians are quite pessimistic, especially millennials are quite pessimistic about the future.
Yeah, but you know, zoom out the world, it's not just about Malaysia, and you would find the same situation happening everywhere.
Well, yeah, in fact, we're going to just look at Spain. Spain has just, Spain's opposition socialist party have effectively allowed for the creation of a minority government, a conservative minority government. This is because they have been at a deadlock for more than a year now, and they were facing the prospect of a third general election within a year. So, you know.
So did you say socialist? Because that's
the socialist
kind of like, yeah, you know, it's
the
99% thing, isn't it? People just getting
There's, I think in Spain, the socialists are a fairly well-established party. It is the populist, I think they call the Podemos party. I think I got that wrong. But anyway, they're the party that have, you know, been more of a disruptor. But the thing is, it's a kind of a gridlock situation where nobody's been able to move forward or break the hold, right? So it's just...
it's a hung parliament issue, isn't it?
Yeah. So, okay, moving on, just quick look at the news. First, the first woman to ascend Everest, a Japanese climber, Junko Tabe, has died at the age of 77. She conquered Everest in 1975 at the age of 35. So, Yemi, you still have time. And then went on to climb all the world's seven highest peaks by 1992. So that's, got a decade and a half she, you know, devoted to that. She was diagnosed with cancer 4 years ago and died in hospital.
Now, I bet you this was before the commercialization of the Everest actually ended. I don't know. I watched that movie, Everest, and, you know, the amount of, commercialization on climbing Mount Everest was just spectacular before 1997, right? And this has led to a lot of deaths, particularly on the issue of amateur climbers trying to be, you know, the world's first whatever, and died in the process. So I guess, you know, climbing, you know, scaling the world's highest mountain doesn't mean that it's for glamour.
It is obviously a deeply romantic thing.
It's not just Everest, because Everest, by definition, you know, when you compare it to the other, you know,
8, like 000, K2 or
the 8,000 meters. Yeah. It's actually quite achievable for a lot of people, because you have a lot of guided tours essentially. But for this lady to have done it in that day and age, and seven of the world's highest peaks,
yeah,
and it's a very exclusive club, you know, it's quite an achievement. So from the perspective of feminism and you know, women's lib, the power to the people kind of thing, you know.
Okay, the party that I was mentioning is called Podemos. It's a kind of like left-wing populist party.
Should you sit with a lisp as well? Podemos.
Yeah.
Only if you come from Barcelona.
Barcelona.
Yeah, if you come from Barcelona.
Oh,
okay,
God. Okay.
Moving on. Fundamentally happy. Now, that's not a state of mind. That's actually a movie, a Singaporean movie based on a play. It's about a reunion between a young Chinese man and an elderly Malay woman. In this case, in the movie, it's played by Adiba Noh. This is a Singaporean movie. Adiba Noh, of course, is Malaysian. And it's been banned in Malaysia because of cultural sensitivity.
So I read this headline.
So what's
right?
going on? What's wrong with this? You know, it's nice and Mohiba. It's a bit like us.
You don't know what the story's about, do
oh,
you?
Oh, is it? Right. Well, come on then. I'm sure you're going to tell us.
So give us the trailer version.
Well, okay, without any spoilers.
No, but you have a knack at that, giving spoilers.
Spoilers? Well, okay. Well, you know, you have to explain things.
It's going to be
very
bad,
quickly.
So,
you know all about this because it was done in the Access Studio and you were a bit of a play thing.
Yeah, I know the playwright, Harish Sharma. I went to university with him. But the point is that a secret is revealed. And a secret is revealed about the relationship between the young man and the older woman's husband, which apparently is at the heart of the problem of cultural sensitivity in this case. So at any rate, the Malaysian government has decided to ban that. We had recently a Malaysian film banned in Brunei, so Viva
so
La
on,
ASEAN.
Well, tell us the secret.
No, I'm not going to tell you the secret.
Sorry, Sharon, you looked at me when you said that.
You didn't know that.
Oh, Pekat was banned in Brunei.
Yeah.
How about that? Yeah. Okay.
So, what, you was know, banned in Brunei?
Yeah, Pekat.
What's that? Being deaf?
Okay, it's a story about a deaf person.
Actually, it's a story that's a metaphor. So deafness and blindness is a metaphor for how we deal with things in society.
Oh,
well, what are we deaf to, Mr. Stick My Head in the Sand?
Well,
Chuan.
Only in terms of politics, because I'm just knackered about
it. Only politics. Okay, very quickly, also, in the war in the Middle East against the Islamic State, we have so many stakeholders weighing in on this. Turkey's just joined in the fight. I don't know where it's going. Mosul was the big city to capture from ISIL. Now there have been other things. There have been attacks. I don't think anybody can call this at this point in time. You know, it looks like a protracted war. Speaking of which, the U.S. presidential elections. Of course, elections are politics. Well, they say, when this expression, Chuan?
Politics is war.
By other means.
By other means,
yeah.
Right.
And it's preferable, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, it's also a playwright, right? We saw how Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton actually chummied up during the Catholic award dinner or charity dinner. They roasted each other, but actually, it was more of a friendly affair. They actually shook hands.
I read a very different account of that said that Donald Trump
was booed.
He was, and that the cardinal sitting, because he ended up saying that, Hillary hates Catholics.
Yeah.
And here she is pretending to like Catholics.
Essentially they shook hands and it was a more cordial affair. They did sit very closely to each other.
Because they were placed there.
Yeah, but this is, of course, a far friendlier account for them as opposed to the political debate. So I guess, you know, it's just drama.
I'm guessing, Chuang, that you're not following the U.S. presidential debates.
All politicians, point. You know, just really knack me out. But on this particular issue, because it transgresses into the corporate world, sorry, transgresses probably be the wrong word, but Peter Thiel, the founder of PayPal, he's an outspoken supporter of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He's going to say, set aside $1.25 million. That's not a big deal by any stretch. But conceptually, him from Silicon Valley.
Over the weekend, you know, on Bloomberg, they were talking about this. And we're going to come back with more on the Peter Thiel controversy right after this, a BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run, and that was Soul Clapping by Sly and the Family Stone, taking us back to circa 1960, something like that. It's an extraordinary... You're familiar with this band?
For sure, man. They were a legend in the 70s.
And, you know, there was...
Funkmeisters.
Remember Jackie Brown, the movie, and the soundtrack? The soundtrack was quite fabulous. I think it was, in fact, banned in Malaysia, too, because there was a lot of vulgarities used in one of the songs, or at least they had snatches in the soundtrack from the exchange and the dialogue. But, Sly and the Family Stone appear on that list of greats from the 60s.
Sorry, I can't contribute to
the Jackie Brown.
You didn't watch this discussion.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you missed Jackie
Brown. I'm more the Justin Bieber kind of guy.
No, you're not. You're just making that up. You're just being a contrarian.
Jackie Brown was a Quentin Tarantino movie. So,
That was Kusu Chuang. And, of course, before him, Ibrahim Sani. Myself, Sharad Kutin. And it's now 21 minutes past 6. Look, over the weekend, there's been a lot. I don't know if this is a storm in a Silicon Valley teacup, but Mark Zuckerberg defended board member Peter Thiel because of his pledge to donate $1.25 million to the Donald Trump presidential campaign. Now, the Facebook CEO, Zuckerberg, came out at pains to say that while he supported Thiel's right to back Donald Trump, this did not necessarily constitute accepting sexual assault, because Peter Thiel had been controversial in making some remarks about date rape.
Yeah, so I find this highly bizarre, because not many people in Silicon Valley are supporting Trump, and certainly not many people in the LGBT community are supporting Trump, both categories of which Peter Thiel belongs to, because 9 years ago he was outed as being gay by Gawker Media, the reporters of whom he accused of being should be more likened to terrorists than writers. And he's also...
He has effectively shut down Gawker Media based on
the
election.
Correct, because of the Hulk Hogan issue. Yeah. And, of course, Peter Thiel supported Hulk Hogan to shut down Gawker Media. The other thing is, within the tech community in Silicon Valley, it's filled with non-white Americans, because, you know, a lot of Indians, a lot of Chinese, a lot of Koreans, a lot of essentially minorities in America. And Trump, he's not exactly conventional in that respect. So
You're being nice, because in fact, and so one of the people that, you know, like Bloomberg interviewed was Chamath Palihapitiya.
So obviously,
who's Sri Lankan of origin?
Within exactly Donald Trump's crosshairs.
So he's a Sri Lankan, and his family's fled Palihapitiya. He was formerly with Facebook, and he's gone on to develop his own hedge fund.
So what is Mr. Shamak going to say?
Well, he was very interesting, because there is a problem. When you say you accept diversity, and that's in terms of, say, ethnic origin or whatever, you also have to accept political diversity. And so she says, well, you don't want to be speaking to the same people who share your worldview. You want diversity at the table. And this is about the board, right? Board members, because Peter Thiel is a board member of Facebook. Now, but then what do you do with a situation like this? And what Chamath tries to do is to say that he thinks Peter Thiel is actually a very makes considered decisions. So he was very complimentary on that front. But he said, well, on this, I disagree, because there's something about Trump's campaign that goes against the fundamental ethos. So if you have somebody on the board whose values are anti-diversity, even though they're being there, they actually in some ways perform that diversity, what do you do?
Well, it's a bit hypocritical, isn't it? Because Peter Thiel came from Germany. He was an immigrant, and he did come to America, and he did make his money. I mean, he's nearly 50 this year. And he founded PayPal. He's worth $2.5 billion or something. He's also founded Palantir. So obviously he's made a big,
anything about Peter Thiel, right, it's about the embracing notion of California and also the Silicon Valley. Because right now, if you look at any polls, Hillary Clinton has more than 99% chance of winning California. more than 99%. And that's like, you know, we haven't seen that numbers in quite a while. And the fact, you're right, Sharad, that he exists as part of the board member of Facebook.
So why is Peter Thiel supporting Donald Trump? That's what I'm wondering.
No. Because, no, he has taken this kind of, you know, Republican approach for the longest of time.
But why? So Jeff Bezos of Amazon was also interviewed on the Thiel move. And he says Thiel is a contrarian and that he is motivated often by that impulse to be a contrarian. So just to take the position that is not popular, the minority position.
But that's not enough to explain Thiel's support.
Exactly. And some people say that's insufficient. And we have a link to a Wired article.
Yeah, on Wired.com.
And, you know, it says that basically, you know, diversity, it's insufficient as an argument. So there's actually quite a bit of angsting going on because people are loath to say we want to shut down opinion. But, okay, so Chamath had this argument. He says, you know, in the Obama-Romney competition, it was politics. But when it comes to Trump and Hillary, it's more than politics. It's about core values. And he says Trump is about a future in America that denies inclusivity, that is against diversity, that is xenophobic, misogynistic, and such.
And anti-trade as well, because he wants to put up barriers against the Chinese, the Mexicans, the Russians, and the rest of the world, essentially.
It cuts across that core values thing.
Yeah, it's which is all running counter to the values of Silicon Valley.
But okay, Chuang, somebody might argue that it's not that he's anti-trade in some fundamental sense, right? It's that he is trying to protect the American worker. Now, so
he's
using
protection to make America great again.
Well, he's trying to use protectionist measures, and isn't that also politics? And is that also legitimate?
No, it's not.
Well, of course, it's legitimate. It's a political strategy that may or may not work according to some people, but that's what the rest of the world is doing.
I am extremely sorry that I have to disagree with the both of you. I don't think that Trump's position is politics, because it's not politics. It's actually very derogatory for him to actually say these kind of things against these immigrants. It's not trade. It's not anything else. It's just human decency. Right now, if you think about it, you know, Mitt Romney actually managed to get some support from the minority groups when he was running for president 4 years ago. And the reason is because, yes, he is running a political campaign. Some of his policies may show that you know, he favors, you know, the Midwestern American kind of community, but that, you know, it's extremely different from what it is today. So just like you know, Donald Trump you know, saying the kind of things that is important right now, I don't know whether, you know, this is politics still.
Well, okay, let's just, you know, if you bring it back to Malaysia, Ibrahim, you know, there is this question, right? The way in which we treat diversity of opinion in Malaysia is to try and criminalize a difference of opinion, right? So we know now that there's an attempt to go after anybody who's a supporter of the, you know, free election movement, Berse. So, and is that right? I mean, so we have the situation where we very quickly turn political arguments into a war where only one can win.
Yeah.
Right? It's a kind of
zero-sum
game. When you talk about politics, it's a question of trade-offs, aggregation. Yeah, okay, you might have
pragmatism even.
This time you win, fine. I accept that I've lost, you win. Next time I could win. And that's always the belief, right? That's why democracy works. When the person who lost thinks they could actually win the next time round.
Yeah.
You know, if they had a better strategy or whatever it is. But when politics becomes a zero-sum game, you really have a problem. Because then it becomes a war. Because, you know, in the conflict in the Middle East, it's really, you know, either you obliterate me or I obliterate you. And, you know, can politics work if it becomes too much like war?
Yeah, and you know, to add on to that, my rule will only end when this country ends, for instance, right? So, for instance, Syria, you know, Bashar al-Assad will continue to rule until Syria is done.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, because for him, his position is not guaranteed by popular support.
Yeah.
It is like he has the right to rule. And we know that there are many political parties around the world who have this view of their position. They never think that they're there because of popular sentiment.
So, as you can see, Peter Thiel setting aside $1.25 million for Donald Trump's presidential campaign is not just about setting aside, you know, some sort of political funds for the party that he chooses. He's actually agreeing to the values of Donald Trump, and I think this is a very dangerous kind of endorsement by a celebrity, if you may. And I think this is going down a path of no return for Peter Thiel and his supporters.
Well, I think that's a big question. It remains one that's hotly debated in Silicon Valley. We'll be back with more stories in the news. But now we have the first bulletin of the day with Azlin Balkis, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. You're listening to The Morning Run. And no, the applause weren't coming from the studio. They're coming from the soundtrack. That was All Around the World by Electric Light Orchestra. The Electric Light Orchestra.
ELO.
ELO to you and me. Wasn't this song
hello
on the track of Xanadu? Was it Xanadu?
The one with Olivia Newton-John.
You remember how big she was?
She wasn't big, but she was big.
Yeah, she was a stellar star, and moving right on. That was Kusu Chuang. Ibrahim Sani, myself, Sharad Kutin. It's now 40 minutes past 6 or 20 minutes to 7, depending on how you see it. You know, but BFM is a perch right on top of a gym. Well, actually, it's five floors down, but there's a gym. When I come in at about 5 o'clock in the morning, I do see people at the gym, and I'm always wondering, wow, they're having a really early start to their day, and they're committed to
Lim Sun Heng is one of them, actually.
One of our colleagues who go to the gym early in the morning.
He's fitter than you and me, by the way, Sharad.
And she's knocking 60, or is 60 by now, I think. But how many of us have the wherewithal, or the motivation to get out of bed and, you know, and sort of focus on something as strenuous as exercise?
So Ibrahim Sani is effervescent with excitement because he's one of those people.
Yeah. So, just to put things in context, right, because what this article is about by Time.com is basically the moment you wake up, you work out. It doesn't matter whether you hit the gym or just run around in front of your house the way my wife does, actually. But for me...
In anger at you.
Yeah, she's trying to run away from me, but she can't do it because,
kids.
So she's just running circles around the house, you know. The story is all about trying to start your morning with the right, you know, with the right key or with the right note. And it makes sense for you to do so because essentially all you need is just about half an hour to yourself. And that's enough to shape your day. We all talk about, you know, start your day with the best breakfast, but it's actually before breakfast. What do you do before that, right? Right after you wake up.
I think Chuang's got a real kind of magical solution. And I've heard this over and over again over the decades. You start the morning with lots of water. You just clean out your system with fresh water.
Yeah. Sorry to check on you, Chuang, but I asked my wife on that, and she kind of agrees. Maybe not the 2 liters kind of thing, but basically she says
water, flush your system.
Yeah, flush your system.
Flush
right?
your system.
Because she said two liters of water might be, you know, taking
okay,
over
la,
the
one,
top lap.
Yeah.
But she's basically agreeing to that.
Can I just challenge some of these notions here? Okay. First of all, the fact that breakfast has been good for you, I don't agree anymore. I think that eating very early in the morning is not actually good. A lot of people would disagree, but that's not the basis. I'd actually also question the whole notion of exercise essentially being good for you. And I say this because I have been working out for a long time, okay? And I've just seen too many incidences of people who are exceptionally healthy, exceptionally exercise-driven, who've gone to early graves. I want to cite one example of that fashion designer, Sunny Sun, who passed away recently, 3 odd days ago. And so it goes, because my sister's quite close friends with him. He was an exceptionally healthy guy. He had organic food, he had fruits all the time, woke up early in the morning to work out. And he, you know, basically keeled over from a heart attack 3 days ago. So I'm just wondering,
But it might not have been that the exercise led to his death,
It is just things that which are out of your control. And it could be as much as 40, maybe 50% genetic. So doesn't matter how much workout you do, how much how healthy you are, if your time's up, your time's up.
Yeah, but time's up. But in the process, you led a healthy life. I mean, the thing about healthy people and having a healthy body, and I know it because I sometimes, on occasion, have a healthy body. I feel on occasion, you know, the rare occasion, I actually feel so so full of energy. I'm alert.
I'm attuned
to the world. And for that reason, not for longevity.
Yeah.
That alone would be a reason to keep healthy.
So that's the reason why I work out, because it you know, just makes you feel so much more alert mentally.
Yeah, but know why, right? Because you are releasing dopamine, endorphins, serotonin and melatonin. All these hormones actually make you more alert and more attentive. Yeah. And get this, with dopamine, you actually enjoy your workout. It's actually a happy
hormone.
I
get high when I work out.
Yeah, well, okay. That's the dopamine talking. Okay.
Well, just a quick Twitter alert here. We did put out a Twitter poll, and the question we put to you is, would you support the right of those who, like Peter Thiel, enable a politics that you feel is fundamentally against your own? And the options are yes, regardless, yes, but within limits, and no. And we have 38 for regardless, 50% yes, but within limits, and 12% say no.
So how many in the survey, though?
Well, 8 at this point in time, but it's early morning and they haven't got off their treadmill.
Nine.
They haven't. I want to come back to the question at hand, Chuang. And when you said you don't believe that breakfast is good.
No, I don't think so.
And I think that's wrong. I tell you why I think it's wrong. Because first of all, what is it they're saying about breakfast? Breakfast doesn't mean you have it the first thing you get up in the morning and you have lots of fried stuff. It just means that your first meal of the day should be substantial and should give you as much energy as possible, and that you should taper off your meals as you go throughout the day. So you shouldn't be eating too much. And I believe, you know, like Buddhist monks and all that, there are a lot of people who just have this practice of not eating after sundown.
Yeah.
And it really gives your elementary track
a rest.
Well,
I'll tell you what, I've experimented with both models, and I used to think that breakfast was the most important meal, and then I've also experimented with the fact that I don't eat until 11 or 12 o'clock. And I tell you what, right, when I don't eat until 11, 12 o'clock, I'm still alert. I'm still able to stay with it. And when you examine, say, other societies around the world, like say the Okinawans in Japan, and they live to a ripe old age of at least 90-something or whatever, right?
Dude, yeah.
And their belief is that you don't eat. You only eat to 80% of your requirements, and then you stop.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
That makes eating in front of the television very boring.
There's a lot of things that can be said about this, right? Because let's say Okinawans. Number one, they shy away from all the red meat. They keep their
tofu
fresh
and
meat,
tofu and fish.
Their whole lives, right? But it's not
if it
the
fishes,
same here.
They eat it, but if it swims,
so you know, 400 years ago, perhaps, you know, when my ancestors were actually toiling the soil. Tilling the soil. Yes.
Yeah, actually, my ancestors are still tilling the soil.
It makes sense for you to have, let's say, you know, 5 plates of nasi lemak, because that is the kind of energy you need to actually do the job, you know, that is required of you. Malaysians, particularly Kealites, you know, when you wake up, what is the most strenuous thing that you have to do, at least the first half of the day?
Brush teeth.
Driving to work. That's the most stressful thing that you got to do. Yes, you have, you know, important meetings and a bunch of other things you got to do, but essentially it's not the same, you know, that energy that is required. Let's say, as opposed to being outside or outdoors. So does the question of having nasi lemak makes sense, right?
Nasi lemak are old is different from the nasi lemak
today. And then,
today.
You know, some people would say, you know, having cornflakes or your Weetabix and all that, but, you know, all that, I don't buy into that anymore.
Well, it still points down to the fact that you got to work out. It's not about adjusting your diet. If you want to lose weight, adjusting diet without working out has been proven to be such a failure.
You know, the one most effective thing that gets me to work out the next morning early is being prepared. So I get my stuff in order. I don't sleep too late. I don't eat too much.
Yeah,
I don't watch the movie. I get to bed and I know tomorrow morning I'm going to work out. I'm going to go to my, you know, my thing.
Yeah. So you hit it dead on.
It's the mental thing.
It's not about the mental thing. Yes, it's about the mental thing, I suppose. It's all about making a schedule into your workout. A workout is not a by the way kind of thing. You got to fix it into your workout.
I don't know about that. I think that, you know, you know, the serendipitous nature of the, oh, let's go to the gym today. It could be, it could work for some people.
No,
why do you have to make it so mechanical and regimented? Why?
Because it works. Because it works, right? So I've got my trainers on. What will happen later on at 10 o'clock is I'm going to run for 10 kilometers. That's my run day. Mondays are my run days. Tuesdays are my weight days. You know, Wednesdays are my rest days. So you've got to fix that. By the way,
for me, every day is a weight day. As I struggle to keep being under 100
That's
kilos.
That's your nasi lemak talking, la, brother.
I don't have nasi lemak.
Che.
But okay, so good advice coming from the both of you. Make a schedule, sleep early, But you have to believe that you get... I mean, isn't part of the problem that people are not motivated? They just can't get out and do it?
I know some people who would rather drag blood from a stone than have exercise.
Okay.
I'm not going
to
say who.
I would like to know who, actually, after this, in a private discussion. But if you think about it, many of the world leaders are actually also incorporating working out or going to the gym in their lifestyle. If you think about it, Barack Obama has a workout routine. There's an article, very well documented article by Business Insider. A lot of these world leaders.
Well, Silicon Valley corporate CEOs.
Corporate CEOs,
Lee Kuan Yew.
Like the big thing now in corporate circles is riding, cycling. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, CEOs, especially people like Zafro.
From CIMB. He actually gets all these other...
I think there's there's one compelling reason to stay fit and go to the gym and eat well. And that is you can actually wear nice clothes and look nice. And, you know, you can get...
You look good anyway.
You know, there's a section of the store that I go and go. Anytime it says slim fit, I run in the opposite direction. I don't want slim fit. Who invented this?
I noticed you got a new shirt on this morning, Shred.
It's very
fetching.
You know what? It's a cast off. This is a shirt that was worn by somebody who passed away, I think, some 15 years ago. And, you know, my friend, it's her father, and she found it in a box.
Like a glove, it fits you.
It does. He was a police officer. Yeah, and looks kind of fetching, doesn't it? Okay.
Okay.
The news is coming up next.
Happy Monday, everyone.
Yeah. But first, here's a Vicious by Lou Reed, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.